Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We are here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine. Are you enjoying wine?
I enjoy a lot of wine all the time.
I do too. I am thankful for that.
Oh, I thankful. It's the week before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think we got to go there.
A lot to be thankful for, right?
Well, yeah, I think as we talked about in a past episode or two, healthy harvest, good harvest.
A good harvest. Vines are dormant.
Right.
Getting ready to reset for the next year.
I feel the same way.
Right? Which is kind of like the holiday time period is just that chance to be with family and friends and be thankful and really think about all of your blessings. And I feel like we have so much to be thankful for.
Well, and you touched on some of the things that you do at your office with friends and family and
so fun.
Vegetable Jell-O.
Yeah, maybe not this year on the vegetable Jell-O, but so we started a new tradition a couple of years ago when we moved into our office space off of Guerneville, because we now have, we're in more of a home, we have a full-size kitchen kind of area, dining area. So for Thanksgiving, our tradition is the week before Thanksgiving, our team divides up making what would be a fabulous Thanksgiving meal, and we all dive in and make something, bring something, and invite our partners, siblings, spouses, kids, whomever you would like to invite to be there with you to really enjoy Thanksgiving with us and kind of break bread with everyone on the team and some of our family members. So it's really fun.
So how many turkeys are cooked?
It's, you know, really just one very, very large one.
well, wait a minute. Like,
yeah.
How large?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't cook the turkey. So I probably have mentioned this, but I'm not the best
cook.
Well,
that's all right. But does it come out of a deep fryer?
No, we didn't do the deep fryer. We actually did turkey breasts.
Yep.
So
do that too.
That made it a little easier. And I'm in charge of the crock pot mashed potatoes, so which is super easy, prepare in advance, they stay warm. So what's not to love?
Lots to love.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving this year?
We always host. We've got both of our moms in our lives, so we're lucky in that way. And so, yeah, we end up hosting and we try to mix it up. We do a lot of barbecuing of the turkey.
Yeah.
Which
is
stems
that preferred
from,
or not preferred?
It is preferred, and I think it came out of living in a very small apartment in San Francisco for many years. And
that'll do it.
Though we did have a small garden, so we just started. We had no counter space, no place for all these things to be cooked. So we started sending the bird outside, and we
that
just sort of stuck with that.
I like that. I like that a lot. Well, speaking of moms, Steve and I will have our moms for Thanksgiving too, but we'll be down in the desert. So. And I believe Gail will be hosting us, which is always nice.
Okay.
So, I know.
And do you play golf while you're down there?
I do not, because that would be very sad for the golf course and everyone else around.
There'd be a lot of concussions.
There would not. It's not pretty. I do now have golf clubs down there and would like to learn, but that's on like the bucket list. So there's hope. Maybe.
All right.
Maybe. So we have to probably start with seeing how bad I am to decide how much hope I need to have, but it's probably not pretty.
Okay.
But yeah, but I know, again, back to like Thanksgiving time, we have been doing so much. I've been on the road so often the last couple of weeks. So I do just want to say how thankful we are to all of our Sonoma County Wine Grower partners and collaborators out there. It's been a really incredible year for partnership. We were able to announce in January our new collaboration with John Deere. And actually, they invited us to join them for the Breeders' Cup, which they're a sponsor partner of. So that was really interesting. It was great, actually, to see Jackson Family Wines have a huge partnership, not surprising, with their love and support of horses and the Derby and others. So we're able to drink a lot of great Jackson Family wines from their portfolio, and we did that. So that was a lot of fun. And then we were on the road to Chicago with our new partner, the Chicago Bears. So. Yep. Headed, you know, off and on to Chicago over the next year to really meet and greet more fans that live in the Midwest and hopefully convert them into Sonoma County wine drinkers if they're not already. So that's a good partner. And then we have Houston Rockets, which we were just hanging out with them a couple weeks ago in Houston, starting our activations with them for the basketball season. And so many partners. Been wrapping up with some of our Farm of the Future collaborators, Agrology, doing year-end recaps. Just had the CEO of Wilbur Ellis in town and the former CEO of Ford Pro in town.
Wow.
Hanging out. I mean, so
nonstop visitation.
It's been great. We get to host a lot, which is always fun in Sonoma County. But again, just I think I don't know what our wine growers, vintners would do without all the fabulous partners that are willing to join us in sort of our mission to bring wine to and elevate the wine category and showcase Sonoma County wine and also help us preserve local agriculture.
And they love to come here.
And why wouldn't you love to come here? I love to be here.
All right. So San Francisco Giants as well in the mix.
Oh, yeah.
For next
oh,
year
yeah. No, and... thankful for the Giants. It's funny because they're like, we're in full football basketball mode. But yeah, certainly we're already gearing up for the kickoff to Fan Fest in the next Giants season, which will kick off in February. So already having those fun conversations. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll be able to unveil even a new partnership, another one in California, Southern California. So
Okay. Shaking
it up.
Hitting every geographic region,
Trying.
And not to mention international, which
right?
we'll talk about at another time. So we are ready to take a break before we come back on air with our guest. On the good stuff. And today in studio, our guest is Ames Morrison, co-founder Medlock Ames Winery. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ames. Nice to have you in person.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a lot to cover. I mean, your background is so varied and interesting. So let's maybe start a little bit about, you know, where you grew up and sort of where you went to school and kind of what led you gradually into wine.
Well, I grew up in Virginia on a farm, and that definitely had a big influence on my interest in farming and agriculture in general.
What kind of farm was it?
It was, when I was younger, it was everything. It was cattle, pigs, and sort of all the things that are needed to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, you know, worked 18 hours a day. It was a very hard life. And then he had this epiphany that we were kind of relatively close to Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
and he noticed that a lot of people had grew up with horses in that area, and as they, you know, grew up, then they needed a place to keep this very expensive pet, and so he turned
right.
our farm into a retirement home for horses,
oh,
and it was just
oh, wow.
it's just a beautiful life for them, and it's kind of fun to be around them.
Yeah, wow.
I don't think I knew that part of your story. That's really interesting.
It makes sense. I do always think Virginia, I always think horses. I mean, just such a long legacy of that. But, and they are very expensive pets.
Yeah.
probably even more expensive than
I don't
your
know.
Cats,
I was going to
Carissa.
Say, tell that to my cats because they've been trying their best to be expensive lately. So
they don't need
thank
saddles
you.
Or
thank
shoes,
you vet
though,
bills.
At least.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair.
So how involved were you in sort of the day-to-day of farming? Like, what part of it did you like?
My job growing up was during the summer cleaning out the horse stalls.
You loved that part.
That
yeah.
they like to come inside to get away from the flies in the heat of the day, and so there's a lot of things that need to be shoveled out.
Mm-hmm.
And then making hay, and I really love doing that.
Okay, which is not just an expression. It's
yeah.
an actual thing.
I know.
Right?
People do
hay.
That.
They
yes.
do for horses.
and the weather is so critical. If it rains a lot in the winter, in the summer there, and so if it rains on your fresh cut hay, it's going to ruin it. So we always had to be very mindful of the weather, and that's just true of farming everywhere.
And so while you're shoveling out these stalls and you're thinking about the weather, were you thinking ahead that you wanted a life in agriculture, or you still had much to explore?
At that moment, that was probably what I didn't want to do.
Yeah, right.
It happens.
We've had a lot of guests say that at the beginning, you know.
But I think it was just in my blood, and I've always liked being outside, and just I like watching things grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, which is a good start to what you end up doing later. So then you go to school in New Orleans, which is probably a little different than...
Yeah, very different. I went to college at Tulane University, which was a great experience. And I met my best friend there, and we eventually started this business together. And then after college, I went into the Peace Corps in Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very formative experience for me. working with farmers in a very remote part of the country. I was like a 6-hour bus ride from anything.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
No electricity where I lived. We had running water, but it was only for about 15 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm.
But the people I worked with, who had most had almost no formal education, were so in tune with their environment, and they knew so much about what grew in that area. I often had to work with community leaders, and one of them in one of the villages where I worked was a midwife, and she had brought most of the people in her village into the world.
Wow.
And she just had this incredible knowledge. I'd walk along the road with her, and we'd look off to the side of the road, and I would just see a mass of green things that all looked kind of the same to me, but she knew what every single one was and what use it had for people, and it really opened my eyes.
Yeah.
How long were you in the Peace Corps?
I was there for working for 2 years, yeah, and then about 3 months preparing that, to making sure I was up to speed in Spanish and understanding, learning about the culture, which is really important to be
yeah,
effective.
Mm-hmm. So did you choose Guatemala, or were you sort of just placed there? Was there a particular program?
When you're
program?
Applying, you can say, like, I want to be in a certain area, or I don't want to be in a certain area. But I was just so eager to get started,
yeah,
that I just said, I'll go anywhere.
And, yeah.
But in hindsight, I could not have asked for a better posting.
Incredibly beautiful country.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were they growing mostly? Was it just sort of subsistence farming?
Yeah, most people just grow corn and black beans, and then maybe one cash crop. And so where I was, our area, coffee was the major mm-hmm. cash crop. So people mm-hmm. would have a small number of coffee plants. And so my job was to help people diversify what they were growing. So planting vegetables mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, ironically, my whole presence there was ironic, that these are the people who are descended from the people who invented agriculture, you know, 10,000 years ago. And it just seems odd to have this young person from the United States come down in there and quote unquote, right, teach them or help them.
Here to help.
Yeah.
But it was mostly just handholding and helping people get back to what their grandparents had done, because they had been very influenced by the Green Revolution and Western agriculture that required very heavy inputs of mm-hmm. Chemical inputs of fertilizers and pesticides and hybrid seeds that were not that didn't breed true, so you couldn't use them to plant again.
Yeah.
And so it just made them very dependent upon this credit system that was hard for them. So I was just helping them return to some of their older practices.
Right.
So,
right.
I'm curious about the coffee. So were they exporting that, or they used it locally, or what? I mean, I have this picture of like Starbucks being like fair trade, Guatemalan coffee. Like, was that even going on?
There was a local cooperative that would buy it from them, and I think some of it was used domestically, but yeah, it wasn't. It was sort of the pre Starbucks existed,
yeah,
but it was before that real
yeah.
focus mm-hmm. on single origin coffee.
Yeah.
But now it's recognized as an
yeah.
amazing coffee growing region.
For sure. Wow, that's a fascinating experience.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm curious to go back a little bit back to college and meeting Chris. So talk a little bit about, I mean, you were studying ancient history, I believe. Is that what he was studying as well? Like, how did you meet?
We met the first week of school and just became fast friends. He was studying economics, and mm-hmm. his career path went a very different way from mine. But we're very different people, but we're just complement each other and, mm-hmm. and just sort of became great friends.
And so at that level, were you already sort of talking about starting a business together? Was this sort of like a faraway dream, or did that happen after Guatemala? Like, tell us what happens eventually to start Medlock Ames, because Medlock Ames has been around
yeah.
25 years, is that right?
We just had our 27th harvest.
27th. Wow. So yeah, so it's a significant amount of time here in Sonoma County. So how did it start?
Yeah, so after I got back from Guatemala, I moved to New York City, and Chris and I did not know very much about wine, but we were really enjoying learning about it and, you know, swirling the wine around in the glass and identifying right. the aromas. It was yeah. just kind of like a little bit of a game. Mm-hmm. And one night, like, we probably had a little bit too many glasses and just had this epiphany that, you know, we could do this. And because we were young and
drunk,
ambitious, and just yeah. didn't know any better.
Yeah, I love that.
We actually believed that that was possible. And so within a few months, we had quit our jobs, moved out to California, and started pursuing this dream.
That's a huge leap.
Yeah.
Had either of you been to California? Like, was it a very specific, like, why California?
California was just, you know, it's just the best place to to grow grapes
here.
Make wine.
Yep.
I would agree. United States, and one of the best in the world.
We just wanted to hear you say that.
Yeah,
we say that a lot.
Yeah, we want to be able to, like, isolate that sometime. Okay, so then the search begins for real. So you quit your jobs. I mean, this is a pretty significant commitment.
Yeah, that's not small.
So you come to Sonoma. Did you come specifically to Sonoma County first?
No, I enrolled at UC Davis and started studying viticulture and enology, and every weekend, we'd drive all over California looking for land for sale. And we looked at about 100 different properties before we discovered Bell Mountain Ranch. And because I was in school, I thought I knew way more than I did. And so I was very critical of every property we looked at and said, oh, it doesn't have this, it doesn't have that, or it's got too much of this. But when we found Bell Mountain Ranch, which is where our vineyard is, it just right away spoke to us. Like, we just knew instinctively that was the place.
So explain where Bell Mountain Ranch is, because it's a very unique yeah. little pocket of Sonoma County.
Bell Mountain Ranch is located at the southern tip of the Alexander Valley, and it overlaps. It's right where the Alexander Valley and the Russian River Valley overlap. So part of our vineyard is in the Alexander Valley, part of it's in Russian River Valley. So it's probably the coldest part of the Alexander Valley and one of the warmest parts of the Russian River. And it's located about a mile off of Chalk Hill Road.
Mm-hmm. And so was that what appealed to you, this overlap, this combination of warmest, coldest?
No, at the time it just, we didn't know the significance of that, but the wine was being sold, the grapes were being sold to a winery, and we got to taste some of that unblended wine, and we were really happy with the way it tasted. So that's what gave us the confidence to move forward.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so did you know that going in, that I like Cab or Pinot, I have a preference for something? I mean, were you looking for that kind of specification, or was it just the beauty and the location and the, you know, did you have a certain wine variety that you wanted to, or grape variety you wanted to plant or work with specifically?
We had our preferences, but we felt most importantly, it's whatever, you know, we have to find something that's best suited to that site.
Yeah.
And at the time it was planted 100% to Merlot. So we thought probably the best thing yeah. for that spot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Merlot's had a tricky past.
Yes, a checkered past.
And we learned that the hard way.
Oh, yes.
So we asked one of the wineries that was buying our fruit if they would consider custom making some wine for us that we could put our label on. And, you know, we went through the process of growing the fruit, and then, you know, a year and a half of fermenting and aging yeah. in barrel. And then we bottled it another year before we released it. And the week that we were getting ready to start selling that wine, this would be the first thing I'd ever sold in my life. This movie called Sideways yep. came out, and they just trashed Merlot,
yes.
and just overnight it was impossible to sell. So that was
so timing was so
awakening.
Great there, yeah.
Yeah, an inauspicious start, I would say. But you carried on. So you buy the property. You did a fair. So how much was planted when you bought it?
There was 23 acres of Merlot planted.
Okay.
A lot of it was planted on AXR1, which is a rootstock okay. that is susceptible to phylloxera. So we knew going into it, we'd have to do a lot of replanting.
Okay. And yep. then that started pretty much right away?
So maybe a year or two after we bought it, we just did a very extensive soils investigation. We dug 100 backhoe pits all over the property to figure out what the best variety mm-hmm. for each microclimate of the vineyard would be, mm-hmm. and then ended up planting 9 different varieties.
So were there other structures or anything else up there, or was it just the vineyard?
There were some falling down structures, yeah. and one was this beautiful old growth redwood barn, but it was mostly rotting and falling apart. But we were able to salvage a lot of the wood from it, and we've built things at the That's great. The property with that.
I thought I remembered that connection, but I wasn't quite sure what it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredibly beautiful property. It's really tucked away. You've got a lot of hillside. You've got a lot of sort of little like nooks and crannies of that site. So it is, I could see why it appealed to you like so quickly, because you could grow so many different things and look beyond Merlot, which is always probably positive.
Well, yeah, and you've had such an emphasis on, I remember too, there's like a wildlife corridor that you've really preserved there. Can you talk about that? Because I think that's amazing.
Yeah, so when we first found the property, it was entirely ring fence with deer fence, which I guess was the standard at the yeah. time. But we've come to learn that that's very hard on wildlife. And so the standard practice now is to just enclose the vineyard area.
Yeah.
But we noticed that we were getting a lot of deer, even with this fence, like they'd sneak in through yeah. a gate that someone would leave open by accident, and they would, if they came in through the spring, they would just eat all the
decimate, yeah.
all the tender
troublemakers.
And then we would spend hours trying to correct, to herd them out of the vineyard. It was really challenging, and we're spending a lot of money doing that. And we realized that although deer generally don't like to jump an 8-foot fence, they can if they're hungry or scared,
motivated.
Or I think if they're bored.
Yeah.
right.
So just to the east of us is a giant 3,000 acre plus wildlife preserve called the Pepperwood Preserve.
Yeah.
And we realized that if we could somehow get the deer to that area, yeah. they'd be
much happier.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And not bored at all.
No, not bored at
so
all.
So we put these two parallel fences through the middle of the vineyard, and that way they have sort of free access to the
yeah.
to get to that giant preserve, and then keeps them from getting into our vineyard.
Win-win.
We put up game camera so we can see that they're using it.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Be right back on The Good Stuff. We are back on air with Ames Morrison, co-founder of Medlock Ames Winery, and you were talking about the animal corridor that you created at the vineyard. Can you talk a little bit more about some of the farming practices? I know about a year ago, you were one of the few wineries worldwide to receive a regenerative organic certification. Can you talk about what that is?
Yeah, we've been certified organic for many, many years, but we sort of had this gradual realization that we wanted to be more than that. And a few years ago, I just started doing a lot of research and learned about, kept hearing this word regenerative that I didn't know what it meant, but mm-hmm. the people talking about it were people both in the wine industry and beyond that were people that I respected. And some of the practices that they were talking about really seemed to resonate with me. And we eventually found this organization called the Regenerative Organic Alliance, which was founded by the Rodale Institute, which is sort of one of the organizations that sort of launched organic farming back in mm-hmm. the 30s or 40s, and Patagonia, who had started to get into making snack foods, and Dr. Bronner soap.
Okay.
And there was one other vineyard that was part of their pilot program, which was Tablas Creek. Mm-hmm. So we went down to visit mm-hmm. them and just loved what they were doing, loved their whole ethos. It was very similar to ours. And so we decided to go through this process to get certified. And regenerative farming is a sort of a philosophy, but it's also this suite of farming practices that tries to recognize that there is this very complex web of plant and animal life, both above and below the soil, and it's all driven by photosynthesis. And so our goal as a farmer is to protect that network as best we can, and that has this tremendous benefits of water retention in the soil. It allows the vines to access minerals in the soil that they might not be able to with their own roots. And so a lot of it revolves around not disking or tilling, which is a very common practice, especially for organic growers like us, because we don't have access to herbicides. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of a big leap for us to eliminate our soil disturbance, but we've seen tremendous benefits from it.
Okay, and this has just been in the span of a year? Like, is that about this, how long you've been, or was that just the certification made official?
We were certified two years ago.
Okay. Okay, so great. So what were some of the, so you have to take this sort of chance on no-till. Is that the first thing that you experimented with, or what else did you do?
That was the, well, there for the certification, there are these three branches. One is animal welfare, which doesn't really apply to us because although we use sheep in our to help mow our weeds, we're not really shepherds, so it doesn't apply to us exactly. But the other two aspects are soil health and worker fairness.
Okay.
And so the big one of the being organic, that we were most of the way there, but the biggest challenge was eliminating tillage, especially during some of the worst drought years in history.
Yeah.
But we noticed that we phased it in. And so we noticed that in the blocks that we were still tilling every other row, we didn't see an increase. We didn't see a difference in yield based on different compared to the ones that we were doing no-till on. So that was encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but sort of to help when you stop tilling, there is a little bit of the weeds that normally you're getting rid of with your tilling are competing with the vine for resources, water and nutrients. And so there's a little bit of a challenge at first. And so to kind of get over that hump, we increased our use of compost, and we brought in sheep to help eliminate the weeds, but also as they're digesting those weeds, they're fertilizing the soil as well.
Those natural mowers.
Yeah. And they're so cute.
I know, so freaking cute.
And then the other big aspect to regenerative certification is worker fairness. And we always say that the great wine is made in the vineyard. That's sort of a what we say in our industry.
Mm-hmm.
But if we really believe that's true, that means that we need to give our vineyard workers the same respect that we give winemakers. And there's a little bit of a disconnect because our vineyard workers know so much about the vineyard, but they don't know as much about the winemaking process and the end result. And in other countries, those are a little bit more integrated.
Mm-hmm.
And so a big part of our practice is to meet with our vineyard team more often, explain what we're doing, ask them for their input, because they know so much about they know every little nook and cranny of the vineyard. And so there's this tremendous site knowledge that can have a tremendous impact on wine quality if we're all working together.
How big is your crew?
Well, and they have a very important person on their crew who was a member of our leadership academy, the very first one, Augustine, who just a phenomenal human.
Yeah, so we just finished our 27th vineyard, but Augustine's been with us for 25 years.
Yeah.
And he knows that vineyard so well. And we have other vineyard workers who have been with us for over 20 years. And so that's just a tremendous asset we have. And the longer that people stay with your company, they just know more. Whenever you have to hire a new person, there's this
takes decades to understand a vineyard. Generations sometimes, right?
That institutional knowledge that comes of just having walked that same vineyard every day for 20 plus years is incredible. I mean, you know it personally. I mean, it's
So tell us a little bit about what, kind of the main wines that are coming off Medlock Ames. What do most people see out there in the world from Bell Mountain?
We make 13 different wines. We have 4 different Cabernets, and over half of our vineyard acreage is dedicated to Cab. So mm-hmm. that might be the one that people know us for the most. We also have I feel like one of our secret weapons is our Sauvignon Blanc. Mm. There's so much amazing Cabernet in this county that it's, everybody makes really good Cab, but I think we stand out a little bit more with our Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, lovely. Mm-hmm. And then you've also got, you've had a history of making Malbec and still a little bit Merlot, some blends, other whites. I do believe you make a Chardonnay.
We do. We make a Chardonnay. We also have a sparkling wine, and we have 2 different Sauvignon Blancs.
Okay. It's a diverse portfolio, which, yeah. Reflects the diversity of that site, right?
Yeah, as you were mentioning earlier, there's so much varied topography and different row directions, different aspects, different elevations, different soil types. And when we're making our Cab, for example, we have about 30 different blocks of Cabernet. And so there's just so many different blending elements that allow us to really get that, to make something like that's very complex. Even if it were 100% Cabernet, it's still the blend of many different styles of Cab.
Yeah. Right.
So much to work with.
So much to work with. I think we need to take another break, and when we come back, maybe we'll open a bottle of wine.
That sounds good.
Good stuff with our guest Ames Morrison, and I think Carissa might be opening a bottle of Medlock Ames.
Did you hear that lovely sound?
I did.
It's Bell, like magic.
We've got a Bell Mountain 2021 Cabernet Sauvignon, I believe. So one of the...
Well, I just managed to pour myself some. I don't know about anyone else.
I know.
But
well,
no, I'm kidding.
This happens a lot. Thank you for bringing that, Ames. And to your point about the variety of and the diversity of Cabernet that you have on that property. But let's talk a little bit, because we don't have too much time left. How can people experience Medlock Ames on their own? Because there's lots of different ways that they can visit.
Yep, they can come visit our tasting room, which is in the heart of the Alexander Valley, or they can come to our ranch. And then that way they get a more in-depth experience where they can walk around the vineyard, have a paired tasting of our wines with their local cheeses. And then we also offer a sound tour. So we... Mm-hmm.
Wait, what is a sound tour? Explain that.
I've done it. It's really
you
cool.
You have? I've not done a sound tour.
Explain it.
It is... We spent a long time, maybe thousands... We collected about thousands of hours of sounds of the vineyard, sounds of the wildlife around our vineyard. And when the guest arrives, we give them an sort of like an iPod and headphones, and we sort of give them this general direction of which way to walk. And as they walk around the vineyard, they're seeing different sights, and there's someone on our team is explaining what they're looking at, why that's significant, and then in the background you can hear all the sounds of the vineyard or our environment that relate to that.
And that's awesome.
It's really amazing.
We call it our immersive sound experience.
Yeah, I love that so much.
So you hear the birds, you hear deer, you hear, what else do you hear? I'm trying to remember.
You can hear the sounds of harvest, which is one of my favorite. You can hear the Mexican radio. You can hear people singing. You can hear the sound of the
like
tractor.
Bins being
and
loaded.
The kind of excited thing. Shouts.
Wow. And so does that vary by season, or it's just one sound experience and it kind of captures all the seasons?
So far we've just done one, but we're considering you know, having different paths throughout different parts of our property that where they can experience different things.
Okay. And then people can come and get a little bit more knowledgeable about organic and regenerative farming with you. Is that correct?
Yeah. So on Fridays, I do a guided tour. And so I can give people a really in-depth look into how we farm, why that matters.
Mm-hmm. And are you farming anything else up there than grapes? Do you have vegetables? Do you have hay?
We have olive trees. So we make our own olive oil.
Okay.
And we have a big garden. So we, in that garden, we have a lot of produce that we use for ourselves, for our employees, for events that we do. And anything that we can't get to, especially, you know, sort of towards the end of the summer, the garden's producing so prolifically, it's hard to keep up.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
then we have people from the local food bank come up and they harvest everything, so it's going to a good use.
Yeah.
And then we also grow a lot of berries, so we make our own blackberry and raspberry jam.
Fantastic. Yeah. So many really different integrated reasons to visit. So let's go specific on the two properties. So you can visit Bell Mountain Ranch Winery. That is on 13414 Chalk Hill Road in technically Healdsburg. Bell Mountain is that complicated location. I think people can go Thursday through Monday, 10:30 to 4:30 p.m. Reservations are required. And then you've also got the tasting room in the Alexander Valley, 3487 Alexander Valley Road. That's open Friday through Monday, 10:30 to 4:30. We have a website somewhere too, right? MedlockAmes.com. We should spell that MedlockAmes.com. I'm glad I can still spell.
I know, that's good. Not bad.
Wasn't totally sure. And follow them on Instagram at MedlockAmes. Well, we want to say thank you so much, Ames of Medlock Ames,
I know,
for coming and spending time with us and telling us a lot more than we knew before.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cheers to all the holidays, too. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Up on this week's good stuff, and so much good stuff.
I know.
Yeah.
I want to go do the sound tour.
I think you should.
At Medlock Ames. I kind of love that.
I kind of would love to see that at more places, too.
I know.
It's such a fascinating idea, like just to really get people immersed in thinking about the vineyard as a living, breathing place.
And it sounds like it's kind of self-guided, so you can show up and just take advantage of it and not necessarily be on such a schedule, grab a glass of wine, walk the vineyard.
I think that's the whole goal.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it is a beautiful place to go, so I encourage people to check it out. We gave all the information.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spell it out again.
What? I was very impressed that you could spell Medlock Ames.
I know. I was.
No, and what a fascinating, we did get confirmation as we were saying goodbye to Ames that his family still has the horse ranch in Virginia and still taking care of retired horses, which I love that so much.
Right, and you have a future in retired cats.
I do. I would love to have that.
Retired cats.
Sorry,
and
Steve.
Retired people.
let's not tell my husband.
Okay.
that would be a vision of mine. Okay.
Yeah, hopefully he's not listening.
Yeah.
All right. So how about your Tuesday night wine? What do you think? What are you going to have?
You know, I mean, it is Thanksgiving week, so there is so many different wines to have, but I do love Chardonnay, so I'm planning to open up some Patson Hall Chardonnay.
Okay, very lovely.
And I'll have that on Tuesday night, and then I'll roll right into lots of Pinot and maybe some Zin
there
on Thanksgiving.
There will be much
wine
consumed.
And a lot, maybe even some bubbles.
I would imagine, definitely.
Maybe lots of bubbles. Did I say
definitely.
Maybe? I meant guaranteed bubbles.
All
How
right.
about you? What are you up to?
You know, I'm going to go Stone Street, Christopher's Vineyard Cabernet. I love that it's second generation of Jackson family. I do think I've been to Christopher's Vineyard, which is always a nice touch from Alexander Valley up in the mountain. Alexander Mountain, I think they sometimes call it.
Yeah. I love that wine.
Yeah. Beautiful wine. I think 2019 might be current vintage. So it's got some age on it, which makes it, delicious.
So, I mean, you're going to be with the moms for Thanksgiving. I'm going to be with the moms for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at some point, we should get all the moms together.
And a bunch of cats.
And a bunch of cats.
Yeah.
And bubbles.
I think, yeah, bubbles are always going to be in the mix. We don't have, you know, our crowd is interested in wine, but not as much into wine as maybe I am. And so bubbles makes everyone
good answer.
Happy.
Yeah.
Make everyone happy.
They're always the answer.
All right. Well, from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff, especially bubbles.
Yes. And happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Cheers to that.